We just, let me go back one slide, back to ex parte Hanun, an ex parte appeal. Would this informative decision constitute a board norm with respect to the application of the 2019 revised patent eligibility guidelines for AIA trial proceedings like CBM and PGR? I in fact find nothing in these six informative decisions that adopt the guidance, and I find nothing in the SOPs that would constrain these ex parte appeal informative decisions only to the appellate division of the board and not make it also applicable to the trial division. And in fact, as we'll see, and not to spoil the surprise, in fact, the board in CBMs and PGRs is applying this very same, almost the language verbatim that you see here in this ex parte appeal. They are reciting that same language in CBMs and PGRs. Okay, but that's significant. What gives the director this power to tell the board how it should interpret 101, a substantive patentability analysis? You know, aren't these APJ's judges? Who's the director to tell them how to interpret 101 and what 101 means? These are not just theoretical or academic questions, because as we'll see, every time the director or the commissioner has issued 101 guidelines in the past, those guidelines have been attacked, and each time the agency's authority to issue 101 guidelines has been questioned, because it implicates the power dynamic, not just between the court and the office, but as between the director and the board. And I think you're certain to see that brought up in the adversarial contested cases that are PGR and CBM. The party that likes the way the guidelines have been interpreted and applied in the cases will be defending it. The party that doesn't like how it came out will probably be challenging those guidelines in court. So let's discuss the rulemaking power for a second. The most general rulemaking power today for the office is found in Section 2B2A of Title 35, which gives the director the authority to establish regulations not inconsistent with law, which shall govern the conduct of proceedings in the office. This language is very old, and it goes back to 1870, the Act of 1870. In fact, it has virtually identical language, the not inconsistent with law and conduct of proceedings in the office. And it was very controversial when this was first introduced in 1870 in a bill. And the legislative history informs us about the dispute on the House floor about what this rulemaking power gave to the commissioner vis-a-vis the board. Congressman Butler raised an issue over this. He was concerned that the commissioner's rulemaking power would be abused by the commissioner to harass and annoy the board. I am not willing that he should have the power of annoying and disturbing, if he chooses, the men who are appointed by the same power as he is and with the same rank. Because at that time, the Board of Examiners, as it was called, they were nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. And then sidebar, hello, Arthrex. So the Congressman Butler was really concerned that this rulemaking power would be too broad and would be abused against the board judges, or what was then called the Board of Examiners. The proponent of the bill and the proponent of the rulemaking authority was Congressman Jenks, and he defended this rulemaking authority as follows. This power to make rules and regulations is to apply to the proceedings of the office and not at all to the persons employed there. The power which the commissioner shall have and ought to have shall be that of regulating the manner in which the proceedings shall be conducted in his office. The rules of court, so to speak, not the rules of decision, but of government. And so the bill then, that Congressman Butler, who opposed it, withdraws his opposition, and the bill becomes law, and it's the Section 2 rulemaking authority, essentially, that we have today. And I'd like to give a hat tip to Herb Wamsley, whose research uncovered this fascinating legislative history. And Herb summarizes this, the rulemaking authority from the legislative history as follows. Thus, the commissioner's rulemaking power is for the purpose of regulating the manner in which proceedings shall be conducted, and not for annoying and disturbing the examiners in chief. All right, fast forward 110 years to the biotechnology patent era. 1980, the Supreme Court decides Diamond versus Chakrabarty, holding that non-naturally occurring man-made living organisms are eligible under Section 101. The board, then the BPAI, decided a couple decisions after that, extending Chakrabarty to non-naturally occurring man-made multicellular plants and genetically altered polyploid oysters, holding those to be eligible under Chakrabarty. And Commissioner Quigg, very soon after Ex Parte Allen is decided, issues his memo summarizing these decisions, and it's published in the OG.